RSN 927's Talking Horses with Joe McKinnon.
Plenty to cover on this week's edition of Talking Horses with Joe McKinnon. Some of it tinged with quite a bit of sadness and some of it with a bit of a reflection and a feel-good story dating back to a terrific horse and other horses such as Tie the Knot with Cherry Tortoni winning for the Tate family at Flemington yesterday. So welcome in, Joe. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Warren. Yes, it's with heavy hearts that we start off the Talking Horses segment this morning with news overnight of the passing of the other half of the Sub-Zero legend. His best mate and longtime handler and rider, Graham Salisbury, we lost yesterday to a long battle with cancer.
Such a terrible illness, and it affects most people who are listening to the show would have been affected in some way, and thoughts are with the Salisbury family and obviously close friends of Graham and Subby, but gee, it just can't be underestimated the contribution that both Graham and Sub-Zero have made to racing and the broader community. I don't think any single individual or partnership, so to speak, in terms of Graham and Sub-Zero, Joe's done more to promote racing to the broader community in the time that Graham and Sub-Zero have been a partnership. It's just such a tragic loss, and what a terrific partnership they were and what a great person Graham was.
He was a great racing man, and in its statement last night, Racing Victoria issued, it was stated by the CEO, Giles Thompson, in very good words, just the impact that he has had on not just the Victorian racing industry, but I would say the global racing industry and beyond. He passed away at the Bendigo Hospital at the age of 76, and in his statement last night, Giles Thompson said, "This is an incredibly sad day for the Victorian racing industry as we farewell one of our greatest and much-loved servants. Graham's dedication to the sport was incredible, and Victorian racing will be forever indebted to him for his service and his great love of the horse. He was one of our longest serving employees, spending more than 40 years in the saddle as a clerk of the course, in the process earning an army of friends within our industry. And he'll be best remembered through his work alongside his great mate Sub-Zero, together bringing joy to the masses as they toured the community promoting our sport and the thoroughbred. From school children to the elderly, those battling ill health, to Hollywood A-listers, racing devotees, to everyday Australians, Graham and Sub-Zero touched so many hearts."
Absolutely, they did, Joe. And such a sad moment. And even as late as recent picnic season, Graham's still chasing winners at the picnics and still plying his trade in terms of working with horses and his skill as a trainer. But obviously, so fondly remembered for his role with Sub-Zero.
Yes, Warren. And I spoke with Graham in August last year on the program when the news of his health was not good. He was really battling at that stage. And this is an excerpt from the interview. I distinctly remember, and many do, that Graham would often say he actually hoped that he would pass away before Sub-Zero, who himself had a serious battle with his own health last year. This was part of the interview I did with Graham last year.
You know, if it happens tomorrow, it happens. It happens in 2 years' time, it happens, you know. I'd like to sort of hang around a little bit longer with the old horse, and because we're pretty good mates, and we've come through a little bit together, and sort of in the last sort of month, it's brought us a hell of a lot closer again because of what he's been through and what I'm going through, you know.
Very sad, Sub-Zero losing his best mate, Graham Salisbury, yesterday. Let's hope that Subby isn't too affected. There's no doubt horses know, and they had such a close and unique bond, Warren. He'll be feeling it too, Subby. He'll miss Graham around the stables, but I've no doubt that Graham's wife, Anita, and their daughter, Nikki, will take very good care of Sub-Zero into the future.
I'm sure they will, Joe. And Flemington yesterday, some colours that are very familiar with good horses, dating back to Tie the Knot and Spinning Hill and others, which are the four with a Paddy Payne stable, Billy Egan with an early double. And Cherry Tortoni was impressive, winning his second start and obviously winning on debut. He's starting to build a good record, Joe.
He certainly has, and he bears, I have to say, a distinct resemblance to his relation, Ty Benot, himself well remembered as a 13-time Group 1 winner carrying the Tate Divison colours. And I'm pleased to say, Warren, that we have Sandy Tate joining us as a special guest this morning on Talking Horses. How are you, Sandy?
I'm well, thanks, Joe.
Lovely to have you with us this morning to celebrate what was another very good winning performance by Cherry Tortoni yesterday at headquarters.
Yes, it was, it was very exciting for us sitting at home watching on the television. It was, it was an impressive win. I think I can say that. We look forward to his future.
The horse has now won 2 from 2. The opening win of his career at Sale was equally impressive.
Yes, it was. I think probably yesterday was. It was probably the better of the two wins, but both were excellent, I think.
He carries your colours, of course, and that of your sister Jill Niverson. Wonderful racing colours throughout the history of our sports in Australia. How did Jill take the win yesterday?
She was very, very excited, and and she was quite positive. She thought he'd run well, which he did, and I think Paddy's brought him along really well. So it's looking good.
Of course, this horse, Cherry Tortoni, well named, by the way, because the Cherry Tortoni dessert does look a little bit like your colours with the red and white, the cherry and almonds and cream dessert that a Cherry Tortoni is. But this particular horse is out of the mare Tortoni, herself a half-sister to Tie the Knot out of the Great Whisk.
Yes, that's right. And she, Tortoni was the last foal of a Whisk. In fact, Whisk died foaling having Tortoni. So Whisk was an amazing mare. Won the 1,000 guineas at Caulfield in brilliant fashion. It's nice to see the family carrying on and going into the future.
And Tortoni herself, the mare that Cherry Tortoni is out of, but had a reasonable racing career. She managed one win in a maiden at Wagga.
Yes, lightly raced, and she had a few some issues, and anyhow she's gone to stud, and she's done very well as a broodmare. Cafe Tortoni is a half brother yesterday's winner, and he's a horse also of promise by Reset.
Okay, and the mating of Tortoni to a horse called Knight of Thunder is interesting. He's currently the third leading first season sire behind Pride of Dubai and Spill the Beans, and himself a dual Group 1 winning son of Dubawi. He was Europe's champion first season sire, and his 3-year-old son, that Malatham, was an impressive winner on the second day at Royal Ascot this week. He stands at Kildangan Studs in Ireland and only had one season at Darley's Northwood Park, leaving just 58 foals, and some of them very good horses, Sandy, including the Group 3 Blue Diamond Preview winner, A Beautiful Night, and the listed Redoute's Choice Stakes winner, River Knight.
Yes, no, he's a very, very, looks like a very good stallion, but I just was interested in him because of his racing performance and pedigree, because Dubawi is, if you take Galileo out in Europe, Dubawi is the next best stallion, and Knight of Thunder was a really good racehorse, probably underestimated, because he probably won 2,000 guineas in England for the ages, really, because the second horse was Kingman and the third horse was Australia, who then went on to win the Derby. And all three are very good stallions, I think. So.
Okay, well, he's got a very good horse here in Cherry Tortoni. So what would be then the plan beyond him going into the spring as a 3-year-old?
Well, the plan would be, I think, probably to run in a fortnight at Flemington. And then I think we have a short break and we'll just have a look. Patrick will have a look at at the spring and see what we want to play, what plan we've got.
Seeing the horse yesterday brought back so many fond memories of the great Ty the Knot, who died fairly young, didn't he, at just the age of 18, sadly, due to complications with colic. But what a wonderful horse that he was, and I'm sure you still have so many very vivid memories of when he was racing with the Guy Walter stable.
Yes, he was, he was an amazing horse, and he did it for so many years. I mean, winning 4 Chipping Nortons and 2 Sydney Cups and Underwood Stakes at Caulfield. I mean, and we have some wonderful memories. And Patrick won 3 Group Ones on him, and Shane Dye won, I'm not too sure, but it'd be a large number of Group Ones, and both jockeys gave him wonderful rides to win all those races. I mean, we were very fortunate to have 2 such great jockeys.
And the theory behind giving this particular horse to Paddy Payne to train, obviously there is that strong link going back to Ty the Knot. Was that part of the strategy?
Yeah, that would be definitely part of the strategy, I think. And Patrick is a fantastic trainer and a very nice person to have a horse with.
Sandy, thanks so much for joining us on the program this morning to relive some of the great memories of Ty the Knot and talk about the future now of his relation, Cherry, toward Tony. To my eye, having only seen them photographically and on the videos of the replays and the races, but there does look like there's a slight similarity between the two horses. Would you agree?
Yes, I think the chestnut coat and they look amazingly similar, really. I think he's a bit more rangy, I think, Knight of Thunder. Cherry Tortoni. I just think he's probably a bit taller and a bit more rangy.
Okay. Well, let's hope that he can even just a little bit live up to some of the performances of the great Ty the Knot, Sandy. All the best with him for the spring.
Thanks very much, Joe.
That's Sandy Tate, whose colours, along with his sister Jill Niverson, were carried to victory yesterday. Warren, very impressively by Cherry Tortoni. Looks a great horse for the future.
He's a very exciting horse, Joe, and I think a similar type of path Patrick was mapping out with Rubisaki through similar races when she was racing through this age group, and Paddy's very much a trainer of using well-worn paths, so to speak. And, gee, I think we're going to see the evolution of a very nice horse in Cherry Tortoni.
To some other sad news now, Warren, during the weekend, news of the passing of another great of Australian racing, Eduardo Cuanco, the founder of Goree Park Stud in Mudgee, New South Wales. The Goree Park colours have been carried by so many great horses over many decades now. And Andrew Baddock, who has worked for the organisation for many years, joins us this morning on Talking Horses to pay tribute to Eduardo Cuanco, known as the Boss. Good morning, Andrew.
Yes, good morning, Joe.
Sad news, losing Mr. Cuanco during the week at the age of 85.
Yeah, it certainly was. Look, we knew the day was going to come sooner or later, obviously, but, he's one of those guys that we thought was a bit immortal and would live forever. And, it seems very... It's a big hole missing now with the Boss out of not around, so... end of an era for sure.
And what an era it's been to this point in time, spanning over 3 decades. And you've been there for most, if not all, of the journey, Andrew.
Yes, I started with Mr. Cuanco at Goree in 1985, worked my way up to stud manager probably early in 1990, been there all the way through. Managed the racing for many years, and we've had some great horses, as you say, over the years. And but credit to him, he's put a lot of money into the industry, a lot of money into the local community, and he's like your previous interview with Mr. Tate, a long-term passionate breeder. He wasn't a big trader or anything like that. He loved the racing, loved the horses, and we've got families there that are 4 generations, and you don't find that too often on stud farms these days.
No. And the horses raced in the colours of Goree, the famous red and black stripes. And they've been so synonymous with racing and success at the top level in Australia for many years.
Yeah, look, they're well-recognised colours and have won races all over Australia and even in America. He's one of his great thrillers was he bred and raced a horse called Manila, the champion US Turf Horse of the Year in 1987, won a Breeders' Cup, and that gave him a great thrill. But they've been great colours and they've been carried by some terrific horses.
Now, the list is long, the likes of Northern Meteor, Desert War, Snowland, Dreamscape, Don Eduardo, who was an AJC Derby winner, Smart Missile, and more recently, Your Song.
Yes, look, it's, he had this great ability, and credit to him when he bought the farm in Mudgee, which is great horse country. It's only 2 hours from the Hunter Valley, and it was well-designed, the property, to breed big sort of strong, tough sound horses, which we did. And he could breed tough war horses like Desert War, which he probably wasn't the best horse we bred. He didn't have a turn of foot, but he had a very, very high cruising speed and was pretty hard to get past when he was highballing in front. And he also had an uncanny knack of, you know, he bred quite a lot of commercial stallions, which very few people can do.
Mm. He loved his racing and breeding, didn't he? And you have stated yourself over the years that he would often seem much more comfortable in the farm environment out there at Mudgee surveying his horses than he would be around business tables in the Philippines.
He loved it, loved getting out to Australia and to the farm. And, I mean, he came from a high-pressure world over in Manila, completely different world with politics and business and quite a dangerous world over there. He could be himself in Mudgee. It was his second home. And he loved nothing better than going around of an evening and just looking at his mares and foals and dreaming what may lie ahead in the future. And that's what it's all about, you know. It's people dreaming. And he enjoyed the highs, and he said the lows were very character building.
Yes, they are, for everybody in racing. There's no doubt about that. You would have many fond memories from the decades you've worked with Guri, but working with him in particular, there would be some funny stories, I'm sure. Is there one in particular that stands out that you might be able to share with us?
Dear. I could write a book. I'm just trying to think now. Look, we had some amazing stories. I remember one of John Peckford, who's been a big part of our team, lives up near Armidale in New South Wales and comes down every fortnight like a consultant. And this particular time, we sent the jet up, or the boss sent the jet up to pick him up. Brought him back to Goree. We did the day's work, and it's 20 minutes in the jet, mind you. So we go back, and we come into heavy fog and had to abort the first landing. Circled Armidale. The boss told his pilots not to push it, but for whatever reason they did, and we came in again and blew a tyre, and this is 9 o'clock at night, pulled up, and whopping great hole in the tyre, airport's closed, we're stuck there for the night, ended up getting a taxi from Armidale with five of us in the taxi, and about 5 hours later back to Goree, at about $800 for the trip. I'm sure the guy that took us down there thought we were drug runners or something and going to knock him over. But it was just one of many, many funny stories. And, you know, here we are driving along the New England Highway with a billionaire that's got a hole in his tyre in his jet. That was a funny time, that one. At the time, probably wasn't that funny, but look back on it, it was.
There'd be many stories. As you rightly said, you could probably write a book about it. So the Goree Park plans from here on in, it was only a matter of months ago that you officially announced a change in direction for the business, Andrew, and that was that it's gone now from being a private breeding and racing operation to a public one, in that you'll be taking horses for outside clients, whether it be broodmares on a distance or horses being prepared for racing.
Yeah, look, the boss was always a man of vision, and he knew his health wasn't the greatest, and he was planning ahead. He always had the place private to himself, his own mares and all his own horses. And he said, look, at his age, which was 85, I've got to wind back to a manageable number. He still loved the racing, but he said, because I'm going to wind back, there's going to be plenty of room there at Goree to open the gates commercially. And it is a unique opportunity for breeders and owners. We're offered a whole package, broodmare adjustment, walk-ins to all the farms in the Hunter Valley, yearling consignment, and we've got a pre-training side that is as good as you'll see on a private property. Track the size of Rose Hill, same circumference. So there's plenty to offer, but it's not easy. We're starting from scratch after 35 years of being private. We're starting with zero clients. So we're getting there, and some people have come on board already, and it's just a work in progress.
Mm. The facilities are quite extraordinary, aren't they? I've had the privilege of visiting the farm a number of times over the course of its history, and I've not seen a private property quite like it anywhere in Australia.
It's a beautiful place, but the big plus is you've got the posted rail, white fences, etc., but a lot of great horses have come off those paddocks. So it's a massive opportunity for people to grow out their valuable investments on a proven land, proven property, a proven system. You know, good sound, tough horses come off there. Nothing will change. The feeding will stay the same. The management will stay the same. So it is a unique opportunity to come on board.
And the final question, which I'm sure many listeners would have, is, well, how does the passing this week of Eduardo Cuenco affect potentially those long-range plans for the business, or was all of that more or less set in stone before his passing?
Sorry, going forward, you mean, Joe? I'm sorry?
Yes, going forward. So the business will continue as was planned before his passing?
Yes, look, it's a different business now, where Mr. Cuenco ran it as his hobby, and he loved it, and he put a lot of money into it. Now, Mrs. Cuenco loves the farm, loves coming out to Australia. She's not as passionate about the horses as he was, and she always said that's his department. So, it's simply, we've just got to turn it around and make it a commercial enterprise, which I'm sure over time we can easily do with everything we've got to offer.
Mm. Andrew, good luck with the future plans there. I'm sure you'll make a great fist of it. It's a wonderful property. And certainly for anybody that might be tuned in this morning and they wish to come out and have a look at the facilities, I'm sure they'd be more than welcome.
Look, the gates are open. Everyone's more than welcome. We've got a cellar door there as well, so people can come and look at their bloodstock, have a few wines. Mudgee's, as you know, Joe, great town. Not, you know, only 3.5-4 hours from Sydney. There's plenty to offer, and we're close enough to the Hunter. So going forward, I want to see the property, you know, just carry on in the memory of Mr. Cuenco and make it run to its full potential.
Mm. Fantastic. Andrew, thanks for joining us this morning on Talking Horses.
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it.
That's Andrew Baddock there, Warren, paying tribute to Mr. Cuenco. What a character he was, and someone that's had a huge impact on the Australian racing and breeding industry through enormous investment over a period of time.
Yeah, well, Andrew's nearly sold me with the cellar door and the adjustment facilities next to each other. That's an attractive package. And Joe, I've almost gotten over Carnegie Express getting beaten by Don Eduardo in that derby. It's taken a few years, but I think I'm nearly over it.
I remember that day vividly. God, it's going back a while now, but that was back when I was working for Sky Channel as the on-course host every Saturday. That was one of the most memorable derbies. He just got there, didn't he? But there was so much riding on Don Eduardo being able to win that race because he was such an extensive yearling purchase, one of the most expensive horses ever sold in Australia. And they were hoping that he could go on and become a stallion, which he did, but winning a derby, you know, obviously adds enormous value to them in that latter part of their life.
Joe, we're almost getting to the time where we've got to move on and take a break, but casting an eye over a Royal Ascot through some, no doubt, some bleary eyes during the week. Was there one or two highlights from you from the week at Royal Ascot?
Well, the links are significant to Australia this week, which is fantastic. Atlantic Jewel, the multiple Group 1 winning daughter of Fastnet Rock, had a winner at Royal Ascot this week in the Group 3 Hampton Court Stakes, and that was a horse by the name of Russian Emperor. So Atlantic Jewel was sent to the Northern Hemisphere to be bred with, and the partners involved in her include Laurie Macri and Coolmore. And Laurie, Australian-based breeder and owner, has retained an interest in this particular horse. So links there back to Australia with the win of Atlantic Jewel's son, a colt that looks like he's got a very big future. And we also saw a win overnight at Ascot in the Diamond Jubilee Stakes by a horse called Hello Doomsday, carrying the colours Joe and Brendan Lindsay from Cambridge Stud in New Zealand. Hello Doomsday is a future stallion for the Cambridge roster, and as has been well documented on this segments over the past couple of months, Warren, Brendan and Joe and Cambridge have not had the best of luck at all. They've had a torrid run with their stallions and their business, but the win of Hello Doomsday overnight has turned their fortunes around pretty rapidly.
Sure, that would have been most welcome. Great work, Joe. Look forward to chatting again next week.
Thanks, Warren.
17 to 9 on RSN 927. Back with Ray Thomas after this.